Hi, I'm Dan Carson, WBHM's education reporter. J.F. Ingram State Technical College is a unique part of Alabama's two-year college system. All of its students are incarcerated. As part of WBHM's prison reporting partnership with AL.com, I went to Ingram's campus at Julia Tutwiler Prison for Women. I was planning to do a short story on Ingram's program there, which is now focusing on life skills as much as vocational skills. But as most people on either side of security fences know, plans change. After sitting in on two life skills classes, I realized there was no way I could write something that would convey what I saw any better than just letting the tape roll and letting these rarely heard women speak for themselves. Quick notes, the early audio is not studio quality, but it improves as we go. The male teacher is J.F. Ingram Counseling Coordinator Rick Vest. The female teacher is Reentry Program Case Manager Mandy Pittman. All the other voices are Tutwiler inmates. As a precondition of my visit, I agreed not to use their last names or publish pictures that clearly show their faces. Now, to the Life Skills program at J.F. Ingram's Tutwiler campus. We start with a 45-year-old who's been institutionalized for 3 decades of her life. The topic of discussion is self-image and how it's affected by the gap between the lives these women had envisioned for themselves and their current reality.
Just had a grandbaby and just buried a son, doing the same things I did from drug addiction, and then just had a grandbaby, and just, it makes me wonder, you know, I said I wasn't going to do it with my kids, and then did it with my kids, and then I buried a child, ended up burying 2 children actually, just buried one from overdose, and then now I got a grandbaby. Time just gets away from me. You always think, you know, you can change it another day or another way, but it's just made me think if something's not done, you know, if I don't start doing something, time just gets away from you. You know, 30 years it's been like that. It don't seem like it's been no time.
That anxiety over that gap is completely normal. That's not, it's acceptable for y'all to feel that way. I mean, we feel that way at home. You know, y'all probably can remember feeling that way when you were dealing with the real world situation. So don't feel guilty about feeling guilty about feeling guilty. Do you have something to say?
I was just going to say that trying to measure up to your ideal self and actually being where you are right now, there's definitely some feelings that go with just like despair, frustration. You don't know what to do to get there. Are you always grading yourself to see how much further do I have to go, or how did I do so far, you know, and that's a hard thing because it's not making anything. You're not being productive. You're not being productive. What it actually does is, instead of repairing that gap, I think it you lapse and you recede and you go backwards. And that's a hard thing for me because personally, I've learned that I can't get stronger by keep looking at my weaknesses. I'm productive when I feel good about myself. I get stuff done whenever I'm feeling okay with myself. When I'm not feeling okay with myself, I'm like paralyzed. I can't do nothing but harp on where I'm not strong at, what's actually going on, and I'll never be my ideal self, that kind of thing. And so I'm not bridging that gap. What I'm doing is tearing it or making it wider and wider.
Very good insight there.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So sometimes that gap in the self can be the thing that makes the gap wider. Because you beat yourself up about this is what I should be. But then how do you get there? Is that an obstacle sometimes? Just you see this image out there of the life you want. How do you get there?
It takes time.
Takes time?
Making wise choices.
Making wise choices?
Wise choices at one at a time. Being committed to change, I guess. Not saying, and I've always heard it said, don't make resolutions, make changes. Okay. And don't make resolutions, make decisions. Be decisive. If you say, well, this year I'm going to slim up, I'm going to lose such and such amount of pounds. You can't do that unless you make a conscious choice every minute of every day or every meal time to eat a certain thing, which you can't just have an overall view because you look too far ahead, you don't get it done. You have to make it's a mindset, I guess, just that every time that it comes up to make that conscious choice or that conscious decision, this is not going to help me be productive in my weight loss. Let me not do this. So it's just one of those things when I guess you really just have to commit to one good decision leads to another good decision, which leads to another good decision, that kind of thing, I think. That's what I found in my own personal experience.
Something I shared last week, I thought really summed it up really well, was in some ways prison is easy because people tell you what to do all the time. There's no, you don't have to make any big decisions. You don't even have to decide if you're going to get up or not, right? Because they're going to get you up. If you wake up, don't feel too good, say, well, don't want to go to school today, don't want to go to work today, well, that's not in your control. And in some ways, that's easy. Then you go out there, especially if you've been here a while, you go out there in the real world, and all of a sudden it's you making those decisions, you having to do those things, and that's really scary. And I think you shared that last week.
You can have all those wants and desires to good, and it's, of all my years of doing time, you can't, this is the first time I've seen any that there's a hope of when I get out, there's going to be a chance of me making it, just because of like y'all was talking about, looking for a job, for support me, and doing this and doing that. That's never, it's always been opening the door to this institution or that institution and saying, here you go. And then there I am, and it's like, there's nobody out there to make a phone call to. You know, there's no help on the other side.
So you're standing at that door.
So you're standing at that door, and you've got all these burdens on you. You've got all this responsibility that you left the day you went into that institution, and it's waiting on you. And then you've got all the guilt on top of everything you've missed that you want to make up for. But you don't have the ways and the means to make up for it. You don't have the energy. You don't have. It's an overload. It's impossible. So you do what you know to do. You run. You run. You run back to drugs. You run back to criminal activity. There's just no way to make it without a support group, without help. And you know, there's always been drug support groups or this support group, but there, I've never seen a support group that's offered, said, oh, you know, we're going to offer you. You're going to have a job and a place to live and clothes. We're going to make sure you have everything you need when you get out to make it to a job and somewhere to be self-sufficient instead of having to go back to the old way of living. You know, that this is the first time I think I got a chance. You know, there's plenty of places for me to go, but there's nowhere I want to be. You know.
I thank you for sharing that. So, that's what we're here for. Prepare you for when you're out there. You're not just standing there with nowhere to go and you don't know what to do. So we agree that having a positive self-concept is important to our success, to getting what we want, to having the life we want and deserve, right?
Right.
So here are some ideas about how we can do that. Like having a positive self-attitude. What does that mean? What's some actual real life, you know, day by day? What can we actually do day by day to have a positive attitude? Any thoughts on that? What does that mean?
Pray.
Okay, pray. We can pray.
Surround yourself with positive people.
Surround yourself with positive people. That's easy to do in prison, right?
There are some positive people here, though.
There are some positive. You're right. You still have some choices in terms of who you surround yourself with.
Just like we have the choice to come over here to school, we have the choice to come to this class, and just the people that come in this class have to have some kind of positive attitude, and they want to change, they want to do better to even be present here today.
Yeah.
Good point.
I'm Dan Carson, WBHM's education reporter. If you're just joining us, we're in a life skills class at J.F. Ingram State's Tutwiler Prison campus. The conversation here turns to the behaviors and mindsets that landed these women in prison, a destination some of them actually see as a blessing.
I know I would be dead right now because I was doing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of drugs a day. And my weight was like probably 110 pounds when I got caught. And I wasn't eating anything. I was barely even drinking anything. It was just consuming dope. And when I got here, my family asked me, you know, why did you do this and why did you do that? And I said, I regret doing it, but I'm glad I did, because if I didn't, I would be dead right now. I would not have my GED, and I would not be in school to get myself in a better place. You know, I would still be in that life doing what I've always done and bringing myself down to where there's no coming back, because I would be dead. And that's how I exactly feel.
So for some people, this time gives you time to to kind of get it together.
A pivotal point, it's a turning point. You can use it as not a setback, but like a turning point. Use it as a starting point to because, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but growing up, the street life or the street way of thinking or criminal thinking, if I ain't got it, I'm gonna get it. That was kind of that was inborn in a lot of my neighborhood. I ain't gonna say in my family particular, but it wasn't hard to find somebody else with that same type of thinking behavior in it, and it rubs off. And so you got this mentality, and you know, the whole time you don't know how to change that way of thinking. You don't know how to get around that. All you know is, I don't have and I need, and this is what's going to have to be done. And after so long, you think that's the way life is. And so when you get to a point in a place where something critical has happened, like prison time or a lengthy sentence or whatever, you got time to really kind of think about, I don't have to live like this. Or there are normal people who don't ever have to live like this, and maybe I need to adopt some normal social behavior or ways of thinking that I wasn't thinking right. Maybe I wasn't thinking right. You know, you start to think about those things, and so you're grabbing at it. You want it. You want anything that's positive. You want anything that's totally opposite of what you learned behavior that had you turned around for so long. So you use it as a turning point and, you know, to start from. You get a lot of good information whenever there are positive people or programs or books or, you know, anything that's around when you're hungry for change. You want those things to try to see where you failed at, because you're desperateness at a point where I'm willing to do anything different than what I've done before.
So start with having myself. You need help, and you kind of figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And the other class, the Thinking for Change class, that's really what it focuses on, is how do you change that thinking that you've learned. Did I use my football game analogy with you guys?
No.
Okay. All right. So I use it sometimes with different clients and different groups. So if your life is a football game, and here we are at halftime, how's the game going so far? Winning or losing? Losing bad. Okay. Down three touchdowns. So what's the halftime for? Go ahead.
I said the quarterback just threw out his shoulder.
Quarterback threw out his shoulder. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's halftime. Now what does the coach use the halftime for?
To regroup, to motivate,
okay.
Reflect.
Right. You go in the locker room, you regroup, you reflect, you develop a strategy to go out and win the second half. And I think that's one way you can look at this time here. Here's halftime. Let's go out there with a new plan, and let's win this ball game. And the great thing about winning your ball game is, it doesn't mean you have to be a loser. Because it's just winners. Because when you win, everybody wins, right? Your kids win, your family wins, people close to you win.
I don't look at it on my part as being, this is my losing point. I'm winning right now.
Okay.
Because I was losing before I come here, and I've turned a lot around. So I don't look at it like I'm losing right now. I'm winning, because I never would have been here if I wouldn't have got myself to prison. I wouldn't, and I know I wouldn't.
So you've already gained a lot, like you said, your GED. You gained that here.
Yeah.
I
found what I want to do with the rest of my life. I have plans to use my trade to take myself higher and eventually open my own shop to do what we do in the shop that Mr. Weston is teaching us.
What is that trade?
Welding.
So, do you like welding?
I love it.
So, would you have ever found that otherwise?
I don't believe I would have. I don't think that I ever would have gotten my GED or took the trade on the outside to find out that I liked it so much. I really don't. I would have worked at fast food restaurants for the rest of my life and did drugs for the rest of my life until my life was over, I believe. So right now I feel like I'm winning.
Now the life skills class at J.F. Ingram's Tutwiler Prison Campus moves to a topic inmates and psychologists agree is key to adjustment in society, getting along with the people around you, which isn't always easy on the outside, let alone in prison.
And we talked about this last class, that some people, they want to tear you down. And that's how they deal with their own self-concept.
Yeah.
You know, let's get everybody down there to their level. Mm-hmm. And that happens sometimes over there in the camps.
It's just hard getting up in the mornings and having to be sit beside four of the people on both sides and with four or five people standing in front of you and five or six people over your head. Nobody has to say or do anything but just be there. Just be there. They don't. Nobody has to do anything to you or it's just breathing, just being there, just smelling somebody else, hearing somebody else breathe. It's just day after day, you roll over, look at this person, you look up at that person, you're looking at this person. It's the same people everywhere, all the time. All the time. So it is hard to be positive and get along with people, because then you're mad, you find yourself mad at people for nothing. I mean, I can't stand that person. And it's like nobody's done nothing to you, but you're just—it's just sick of being around people.
Mm-hmm.
So many people, all the time.
Here, the discussion veers to two things that often come up in big-picture conversations about the penal system: forgiveness and encouragement, but not in the direction you might guess.
Yeah, we talked a little about, you know, the better you feel about yourself, the easier it is to kind of
get along with others,
and to forgive other people's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, any other examples how we would be positive in our behavior toward others?
Be encouraging.
Be encouraging.
If you see someone trying to better themselves,
mm-hmm.
trying to take steps to do something other than what they've always done, especially in here, you feel like nobody has paid any attention to the changes that you've made.
Yeah.
And just saying, you know what, I'm glad that you're going to that class.
Mm-hmm.
Just that little bit of encouragement, that person might have been thinking about dropping out of that class.
Mm-hmm.
But just you saying mm-hmm. that is what encouraged them to stay in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. I know GED's hard, but it's going to be so much better for you out there. I'm glad you're taking that.
Yeah.
And instead of dropping out, they might stay. They might stick through it. Just like myself, I know I need an encouraging word every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
I know other people do too. And that feeling that I get when someone encourages me, it makes me feel good to know that I make another person feel like that too.
And that improves your self-concept when you're able to do that. It's awesome.
Back to the inmate who said being incarcerated was a blessing compared to how she was living beforehand. Listen to what happened to her as she took her GED test and to how past failures discouraged the good kind of risk-taking.
So before you took the GED, your self-concept was telling you, I can't do this.
Yeah.
But then you took it, and you're a smart person.
Yeah, I enrolled in class four different times, and I only went to take my test once, and I almost passed it. The only reason I didn't is because I went into labor while I was taking my test.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know I was in labor, I just knew I was hurting. And I never went back to retake it. Well, when I enrolled here, they got my scores for me, but I still took the whole test over. And I had no idea that I was going to pass it. I really felt like I wasn't. But when I got my scores back, I pulled all my scores up higher than what they was before and passed it. So then it made me feel like whatever I wanted to do in the trade, I could do it. You know,
yeah.
It wasn't that I just need to stop at GED and I could get a better job and wouldn't be just fast food. You know, I could do something where they required a GED or high school diploma. Then I feel like I could take a trade and go somewhere with that.
So success changed your self-concept.
Mm-hmm. It did.
And we talked a little bit last time about the vicious cycle. Low self-concept or poor self-concept, you're afraid to do things. You're afraid to take chances.
In case you're just joining us, we're in a life skills program at J.F. Ingram State's Tutwiler Prison Campus. There's a slide up on the screen in the dark classroom. It shows five steps to developing a positive self-concept. Step five is understand and accept the things around you.
You know, not
try to buck the system and you know that folks is coming, you know they fixing to say something, humble yourself and keep it moving because you ain't got no wind. If you try to skip rule number 5, what's going to happen is you're going to be in some acceptance at some point in time. So just surrender to step 5 or whatever, because if you don't understand and don't accept it, it's going to be a lot harder on you. And then your self-concept, you know, the way you see yourself is really going to suffer because, yeah, you know, they got places for that.
Yeah, so, there is no taking care of physical appearance and sex. Getting along with people around you won't
just
be a problem.
Don't even buck the system. Do what them folks tell you. Understand, accept that you're in prison, that there you've got authority figures that are going to, you know, tell you what to do and woo-woo-woo-woo. And just understand that nobody owes you anything, and you just gotta live life. Don't do the best you can, and accept how it is. You got to be certain places. You know you're expected to do things. Understand and accept that will help you to do that and have a good positive self concept.
That's right.
We're going to kind of shift gears here a little bit.
That final gear shift takes us to an essay written for class by the woman who said she'd be dead from drugs if it weren't for prison.
In few words, imagine you are introducing yourself to someone who has never met you before. Just be in mind that few words to me meant the whole dang paper. Okay, hello. I am a 28-year-old female in trade school learning to become a welder. For the first time in my life, I feel like I have found my purpose in life. I never dreamed I would ever go back to school, but I always dreamed of being a head person in a profession I love. When I was a kid, I would dream of myself in high heels and a really nice dress outfit that had a jacket over it. But I always loved getting dirty, helping my dad in the yard or when he built our house. The first time I saw someone weld, I was about 10 years old. My dad was welding something on a trailer to haul his tractor around. But I never thought I would love to learn the trade. So when I entered welding, I was so surprised at how much I loved it and started to have big dreams for my future in the trade. It is a big change from wishing I was on Wall Street in New York, being a top dog at some fancy business, to trade stilettos for steel toes and pinstripe suits for a pair of Carhartts, to go from CEO to small business owner of a welding shop, from a clean desk office to getting down and dirty, making nice things out of metal.
Good, thank you. Wow.
That was fabulous.
Wow.
That was good.
Very eloquently expressed.
Very eloquently.
Wow.
Stilettos for Carhartts.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming along. For WBHM, I'm Dan Carson.
My granddaddy came sober. Count all the fingers and the toes. Now I suppose you hope the little black boy grows. 18 years younger than my mama, but I really got beatings with the girl of trauma. In single parenthood, there I stood. By the time she was 21, had another one. This one's a girl, let's name her Pam. Same father as the first, but you don't give a damn. Irresponsible, plain not thinking. Papa said chill, but the brother keep winking. Still he won't down, you would tear out your hide. On your side while the baby make a slide. But mama got wise to the game. The youngest of 5 kids, hun, here it is. After 10 years without no spouse, mama's getting married in the house. Listen, positive over negative, for the woman a master. Mother queen's rising a chapter. Deja vu, tell you what I'm gonna do when they reminisce over you, my God. I recall a man off the family tree, my right hand Papa Doc I see. Woo. Took me from a boy to a man, so I always had a father when my biological didn't bother. Yeah. Taking care of this, so who am I to bicker? Not a bad ticker, but I'm clocking Pop's liver. Yeah. But you can never say that as life is through. Uh-huh. 5 kids at 21, believe he got a right to.
Right.
Here we go while I check the scene with the Portuguese lover at the age of 14. The same age, front page, no fuss, but I bet you all you know they live longer than us.
That's right.
Never been seen now, that's where you're wrong.
Uh-huh.
But give the man a taste and he's gone. Nodding off sleep to a jazz tune. I can hear his head banging on the wall in the next room. I get the pillow and hope I don't wake him. For this man to cuss, hear it all in verbatim. Telling me how to raise my boy unless he's taking over. I said, Pop, maybe when you're older. We laughed all night about the hookers at the party. My old man standing yelling, good God almighty. Use your condom, take sips of the brew. When they reminisce over you, for real. Reminisce so you never forget this. The days are way back, so many bear witness the fitness. Yeah. Take the first letter out of each word in this joint. Listen close as I prove my point. T to the R-O-Y, how did you and I meet in front of Big Lou's fighting in the street? But only you saw what took many time to see. I dedicate this to you for believing in me. Rain or shine, yes, in any weather. My grandma Pam holds the family together. My Uncle Doc's the greatest, better get the latest. If we're talking about a car, Uncle Sterling got the latest. I strive to be live because I got no choice and run my own business like my Aunt Joyce. So Pete Rock hit me, enough respect due when they reminisce over you. Listen.
Listen. Just listen to the funky songs as I rock on.